Welcome to Four-Sided Dive, Critical Role's monthly talk show featuring a roundtable discussion about the events and characters of our current campaign, alongside a heavy helping of hijinks. Four-Sided Dive airs the first Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/Critical Role and youtube.com/Critical Role, with the VOD available on YouTube the very next day. And of course, each episode releases right here on the Critical Role Podcast Network 1 week after the initial broadcast. Let's dive into the chaos.
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
It's the first episode of Four-Sided Dive.
We're doing it.
Number one.
Yes. Cool. I almost got this done in Q1.
Almost. Close enough.
But we're here. Yeah.
One is the loneliest number, so it works better to do it in Q2.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
We're all searching.
Yeah, the wits will come. Uh-huh. First and foremost, we're going to roll to see who's the tavern keeper, AKA our host for the day. Thank you, Danny.
You're welcome.
Serving us up. Ooh.
Just like that?
Just like that. I'm going to take this purple one because it feels laudany.
Or the blue one?
I want the blue one.
You gotta do
the blue one.
I'm gonna use yellow like Chitney's teeth.
Perfect. All right, we all roll at once?
Yeah.
Are we doing?
Okay.
Let's see. And.
That's right.
Oh, that's terrible.
We're all pretty bad.
Pretty close. But I think I'm taking the cake this time.
Thank God. I had no idea.
It was almost you, baby.
Almost.
You have nothing. You have no idea what the show is.
I have no idea. It would have been awful.
It would have been a great show, actually.
Maybe next time.
I will do this bitch with my natural 17.
No.
Here we go.
Okay.
Are you ready for this, Kyle?
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Sorry, I almost hit my husband in the face. Oh my God. Alrighty, howdy do, everybody, and thank you for joining us on the first Four-Sided Dive. I rolled the highest, which means I am your first tavern keeper. I get the privilege of moderating this discussion, moving things along, and reading this cold open from the prompter for the very first time. Right now, really. This is true. I have not read this before, and the host is randomly chosen every time, I promise, or my name isn't Travis Willingham. Tonight... We will be sliding metaphorically into the DMs of the MM, the DM from the way back when, and find out what makes Matthew Mercer such a gem. Robbie Damon stole our hearts and fled to Kai Mall before he could tell us how that squall got so silky. Nowhere to run now, Damon. Your silken secrets will be exposed. Marisha Ray, she's playing a dead lady with a rat, and we're gonna find out what the fuck is up with that. And Travis Willingham traded in a silver fox for a pocket-sized werewolf. But is Travis for real this time? Or is Chetney Pocketpie just another fair-weather, wise wanderer with a weakness for Werther's, waiting to wantonly ride away with a whimsical wave goodbye?
Wow.
We'll wind out a whittle waiter. What? And waiter on... Oh, I see it. I see what we're doing. And later on, we'll be playing Mario Kart. Now make car noises. Mario Kart. Now make them sexy car noise. Boom. Boom, boom, boom. I'm so tired. Welcome to Four-Sided Dive. Let's fucking do a show. All right. We're here. We made it, you guys.
We did it.
We did it. Uh-huh.
Yep.
And we have a lot to discuss.
Uh-oh.
So we are going to start with a roundtable style discussion about some of the latest, greatest, deepest, and dankest topics with related to Bell's Hells.
With related.
I don't know. I'm just
this
reading
is already paying dividends. This is the best.
We call this segment... What the fuck is up with that?
Yeah!
So, tonight, our topics of choice are going to be Travis and his two old men. What the fuck was up with that?
Oh.
Robbie and Dorian's journey. what the fuck has been up with that. Mm. Lana and her relationship to the Briarwoods. What the fuck is up with that? That's some creepy ass shit.
Yeah.
And how do we actually feel about Werther's?
Can I answer that now?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know if we're saving it or not.
Okay.
all four of those are good.
But first and foremost, Travis, what made you want to be old as fuck this campaign?
I've just been so young and virile, you know, just so potent in the previous campaign.
Oh, my God.
I thought, you know, time to break out the prune juice. Do old people drink prune juice? No, constipated people do.
You'll know soon enough.
I'm thinking of grape nuts. Yeah. By the way, when was the last time you had some grape nuts?
They're great. You know the best way to cook grape nuts?
What do you mean cook?
Grape nuts?
Why would you cook?
Yeah, what are you talking
grape
about?
Nuts?
Oh, why wouldn't you?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you're uncultured. Grape nuts in a bowl.
Okay.
Milk in the grape nuts just to the top where the milk's barely peeking through. Then you stick it in the microwave with a drizzle of honey for exactly 1 minute. You got yourself a nice little hot breakfast cereal.
Are you
interesting.
Serious?
You're an old and you don't know this? Get it together. What? The proper way to eat grape nuts.
No, I feel like I need to try and do this.
Somebody back me up here.
No.
Okay.
No. Someone back me up, but
fine,
I think
right,
does
it soften up yeah, the gravel known
yes,
as
it
nuts?
Makes it like a nice,
like an oatmeal?
Like a, almost like an oatmeal consistency.
Well, then why not just eat oatmeal? Yeah.
Well, then why not just eat oatmeal? Because I'm eating grape nuts. That's why. This is a great start.
I think we've already set the theme for the next episode of this, where we actually have to try this on set.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You will thank me. It is delightful.
It's going to burn us. We're going to burn ourselves making microwavable honey grape nuts.
Grape nuts, sponsor us so we can immediately ruin
you. No, no. No, old people, I didn't particularly want to play fogies, but I wanted to play Chetney. And then we knew we wanted a character that wanted to be there in the beginning and then bounce. And when we were talking about it in the beginning, we said that we could just make like some old, you know, glass cannon wizard. But that didn't really feel right. Yeah. I think we even made like some art of just a basic character
That's
design.
That's right, we did.
And
we
in doing just that, like, we're
crank
like,
out a wizard.
What about 30 years later, Bertrand Bell?
Yeah, we laughed and we went, I mean,
it could work.
It's pretty good.
It could work. And then I didn't realize how much fun playing an older gentleman would be. That just kind of snowballed by itself. Goes to bed early, wakes up early, falls asleep. Retails his
hopefully
glory.
Wakes up.
Yeah.
Too dark?
Hopefully.
Too dark? Oh, sorry.
No, we were talking. At one point, he was like, every night when you go to sleep, I should just make you roll for survival. Just in case you go too hard, that's the end of it.
Oh, how's the game going? Oh, my character died last night. Oh, what were you fighting? Inevitability?
So you guys get your long rest. Travis, go and roll d20. Come on, man!
It's going to be a long rest.
Yeah.
The great part about old jokes is that we all get to be it someday.
Yeah.
It all circles back around, if we're lucky.
That's yeah, we're true. Setting yep, ourselves up true. For this. We know it.
Yep.
Yeah, this is just grim humor in the face of eventuality.
Eventuality, yeah.
We'll watch this back in 30 years and be angry.
Yeah.
Is this the existential segment of the show?
Yeah.
Out of the gate!
The first one.
I love it.
I consider Chetney a little bit younger compared to Bertrand, just because I think he's going to do... How old do gnomes get?
Yeah, like younger in...
Hundreds.
Younger in spirit?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, he is coming alive in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
This is the hottest he's ever been. He's playing with a full deck now.
Oh, have you God. Said how old he is on the nose yet?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And you'll have to work real hard to get to that number.
Okay. Does he still remember?
Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That was a nod and a shake. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How long
we'll
do gnomes
out.
Live?
We'll out.
You said hundreds.
I think hundreds of years, yeah.
Hundreds of years?
He's going for that fifth digit. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, shit.
Wait, fourth digit.
Whoa!
Shit.
Whoa!
10,000
kilos down the road. Dang.
Put that on a Smucker's jar. Yeah. Happy birthday, Chetney. Your 10,000th birthday.
He was on a hill all remorseful and stuff, and a crow lands, and Chetney's like,
What up, girl?
Did I sleep through?
Oh my god. Yeah, that's why.
It's perfect.
The elves have moved on, but Chetney remains.
Yep.
The elves have moved on. Oh my god. Well, Robbie.
No, no. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to spark another crisis.
Perpetual. Perpetual crises.
Dorian has had quite the journey.
Yeah.
He's had two international or transcontinental flights.
Yeah, that's true.
In like 6 months.
All he really wanted to do was like get out of his backyard and yeah, he's in for it. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's it been? Oh, and then, well, we just also saw EXU Kaimal.
Oh, is that, yeah, mm-hmm. That was another experience. Ah, what two different realms.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I think
yeah,
that's
yeah.
the biggest thing, like, as a player and then as a character that was, like, fun and challenging is jumping out of one world and then literally it feels like it's all interconnected. And that's to your credit how cool all of that is because, you know, it does feel like this universe that keeps expanding, And then now to have bounced there, it was like first episode of EXU Kaimal was just sort of a boom, like a total jump into a completely something else, which was so fun because it's got this fresh and new feeling. So yeah, I think the cool part about his journey is that I never set out with that strong of an intention intentionally, so that he was able to just sort of go with the flow. Doing anything other than that would have been a little bit much, I think, as a first-time player.
Yeah?
Yeah, like if I had these grand machinations of what his future were to be, I feel like Matt would have squashed him in session one. Yeah.
I would have used him against you.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
You're right. Yeah.
Don't give him bullets.
Well, we do talk all the time about when the Eye of Sauron that is the DM turns to you and puts that giant spotlight on you and you have to go into all your character shit.
Well, Cyrus was that in a big way.
Yeah.
That was the thing most in early C3 that like blew me away is when that character came to life because I'd written I say expansive, but I don't see what you guys are writing, so I don't know. But I feel like for me, it was a relatively dense background for a simple story. And Matt took a character that was meant to be a driving force and turned it into a real flesh and blood human.
Uh-huh.
And I never expected it. Uh-huh. I did not know that would be that force in the campaign. And what fun. Like, that gasp you hear is real. I'm like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
That guy was
we're going to talk to him?
Yeah. That guy was just the guy I wrote about in Pretend. And now he's here for real. And I've got a role play with him. Really hope I remember my motivations. But super fun. As good as it gets, really.
How was Matt's interpretation compared to what you envisioned?
Different, but amazing once we started to roll with it. Because, like, you know, like with Dorian's journey, I was very obviously trying to, like, if I had any kind of mission at all, like, above the table, it was to try and turn some tropes on their head, you know? And tropes that I love. Like, I love the noble who is reluctant. It's, like, one of my favorite fantasy tropes. Like, I'm a huge Strider Aragorn sort of fan, but it's always the same thing. And so I was like, I don't want to seek out my nobility. I must find myself. And, and less so for Dorian in the sense that, you know, he doesn't have those pressures. He's leaving to find himself because he feels ineffectual at home, which is a different kind of reason for wanting to leave. And in my imagination, Cyrus was always this very stalwart, sort of capable, the perfect first son. So that's what always gave me the motivation to say, like, well, I'm going to leave home. Everything's going to be fine without me. So then when Matt brings him in and he's this lovable himbo that is just like, I'm gonna follow you too. I'm like, oh shit, what do we do now? We're both morons.
I thought you cast a big shadow.
Yay.
You're a problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's super fun. And obviously, like, you know, it's your world, so you got to roll with it, and all for the better, because I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed what you brought to life in him much more than what was in my original backstory. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. It's a fun one. I like to imagine that he's very capable in the space that he was raised to settle in.
Yes.
Like when he's at the Silken Squall, when he's amongst his people, when he's amongst his family, like he very much embodies exactly what he was meant to embody, everything he's been trained for, brought up for. And I think it's because of once he saw Dorian leave, once he like began to realize there was more possibility out there and that you took it by the reins and ran, and then found out that was kind of a historical aspect of the family, he was like, well, I'm gonna try it. And that's when you realize he really just should only do that. He should only really do that. He's real bad at everything else.
Yeah, and that's so fun. You take that character out of their element and see what they become and who thrives and who doesn't out in the big scary world.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like the people that go to Rumspringa and then go, and then at the end of it go, no, I'm going back.
Yeah.
This is not for me.
Yeah.
I have a question. The bounty for Cyrus was 20,000 gold, but by the time you made it to Kaimal, it was 40,000 gold. So what the fuck happened on that boat?
I'm not sure where those numbers got crossed out. I feel like it was always 40, and then it was like, it's only 20, and they're like, no, it's 40 again. It's impossible to know, but those numbers feel like when you're like, when Matt's nickel and diming us for $5 silver rides on a gala, 40K sounds insurmountable.
Impossible.
It sounds insurmountable. And so it didn't matter if it was 20 or 40. It felt impossible.
Plus Cyrus was like, I got a bounty on my head. I guess it's like 20,000 gold. No bigs. Just no bigs.
Well, I think that, man, correct me if I'm wrong, might be rude in that maybe it is no bigs for us back home.
Yeah.
But like going off on your spirit quest and coming back with a 40G debt doesn't exactly sound like you did the best job at it.
You didn't use the parental credit card, right? It was emergency only. 40K.
Yeah, I had to use
What did you do?
I used the black card because I was going to get murdered. Yeah. I have no idea. I have no idea what he did or how he did it, but we'll get him out of it eventually, maybe.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny watching Kaimal because, Dorian had... We got to witness this great, like, Dorian kind of coming into himself and finding his confidence and being like the hero and the good guy, and then you jump back in with the EXU, you know, the Crown Keepers, and it's like, well, they're all bad influences. Uh-huh. Full reverting.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because it is also the most confident I've felt as a player.
Yeah.
I think having a bit of time to step back from C3 and then jump back into that world. It's night and day playing with those people and learning the things that I did in C3 and coming back. Because I and Dorian were both so, not overwhelmed, but like uncertain about what I should do and how to do it. And I felt like it was a lot easier to take the reins this time and like sort of do the things that I wanted to do. It was really fun.
It's going to be a character alignment now, right? You're going to go full evil.
Character,
Dorian's going
full evil. Yeah. Lawful evil, maybe.
Oh, shit. Lawful evil is more terrifying, in my opinion, than chaotic evil.
Very much so.
Dorian, how'd the bounty go? I took it.
Oh, dear.
Shit.
A lock of his brother's hair braided
Animal.
Into his own. Too dark.
He's Make taking trophies now.
Make that explains the nice boots.
We're supposed to be bros.
Yeah. We're not looking for it now.
Oh,
man. Right, don't worry. That'll never happen.
That's hilarious.
I love it.
Well, next on this topic is Laudna. Mm. But it feels weird if I ask myself.
No, too bad. At the job because you roll.
This is like a round table, you know, so we can all ask away.
Yeah.
Marisha.
We don't have the question.
No. Laudna and her relationship to the Briarwoods. What the fuck is up with that? Thanks for asking, Marisha.
You look really great today, Marisha.
Thank you.
What have you done with your hair?
Yeah.
Seriously, what the fuck is up with that?
Ladna and her relationship to the Briarwoods. It was something that I, like, Matt and I had to talk a lot about to make sure that, like, we weren't going to break canon or Briarwoods physics or
yeah,
whatever.
Well, you brought it up to me. You were like, could you maybe do this?
Yeah.
I was like, let's talk about this.
What came first, the character or the connection?
So, full on, I had, this is going to sound crazy, but I had a nightmare one night, and it was the flower girl, like, vision that I made when we were breaking into the moon tower, and it did the flower girl without the jaw that rushed.
Yeah.
I had, that was a dream that I had where I couldn't find Matt and I couldn't find Omar, and I ran out in front of our house and I looked down the street and there was that flower girl.
Oh, no, that's cool. That's
standing fine. At the end of the at the end of the road.
Are you sure it was a dream?
And she
just saying.
No. Nope.
Especially when it's misty out there. You know?
And yeah, and then she rushed me and then I woke up. And I it was one of those dreams where it literally like knocked me out of sleep and I woke up and I was like, gah! I want to be spooky for campaign
no!
three. And then and it kind of came from that. And I was like, there for a while, I was like, oh, do I play like, do I play a little girl who's been, she's like much more mature now, but she died when she was young in Whitestone in the Briarwood incursion. And I was like, nah, I'm gonna, that could get weird. Mm. I'm going to make her grown up. And then, and yeah. And then just through talking about it, it was like, what if she was on the tree and she was the Vex double?
Dang.
Yeah, well, look, I think it was, and then from that point you decided you wanted to go multi-class warlock sorcerer.
Yeah.
And I was like, what patron? What kind of patron are you on? And you're like, well, what if it was Delilah? And then it was like, cool, let's work on this. let's workshop it a bit and see what we can do.
Even work? Well, I mean, we're not going to get that part of it though for a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Like the
you don't even know.
Just the story that I wrote was that like when Delilah did her big like ziggurat blast, that and essentially justifying it that because Ladna already had magic abilities. That's where her sorceress like you know she was naturally and innate with magic abilities. So she wanted to try and learn and get better, and then that's how she got lured to the castle by the Briarwoods.
Oh my god.
And she thought like, oh cool, maybe I'm gonna get like a tutor. But nah, she was just there because she was naive and vulnerable and
looked a little bit like one of
and
the people
looked
they
a
met.
Little yeah. like this right. woman that never crossed Ladna's path.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when Delilah did her big like necromantic blast, that whatever kind of innate magic was living was still in Ladna just kind of took hold and kind of took that spark from Lady Briarwood, and that's kind of all I know. So and now she talks in my head sometimes.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Oh geez.
I have a question.
Yes.
All right, so when you're tying these threads together as a player and DM, and you guys have spent 7 years building this lore and creating canon through your publications and the games and all of that. You know, I know that fans in general love tie-ins and they love nostalgia. Like, that's just one of those things that I think it's inherent in people. They're like, oh, I know that thing. I like that thing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, and something you're doing well, that I wonder how you navigate that razor's edge of like giving the cool tie-ins for the fans, but also walking that fine line of not having it be all this, not getting into the realm of hokey. Because you could easily.
Relying on it.
Yeah, and you lean on it too hard and you're like, oh, we love Vox Machina, look how it's tied. But it's gotta be perfect. And I feel like those little seeds you guys are planting are so cool because it's a canon world that has a timeline and you planted the seeds and now you're just gently sort of harvesting them throughout this universe. Totally. I don't know, what's that like? I mean, what does that discussion look like when you were discussing the Briarwoods thing?
I mean, that is the challenge. And so when she brought it up, I wouldn't say reticence. It was just like, I want to make sure that we create something that doesn't hearken too strongly on an existing story to where it robs your character of her own unique narrative.
Right.
You know, we don't have like a group of unique characters and then the Vox Machina tie-in character, you know? So it was very much like finding that balance to where it's fun to do nods, it's fun to have it, you know, sit in that world with realistic roots, because Vox Machina did leave a big impact on the world, you know, and you can't like dodge that too much, but definitely don't want any of that past elements to overshadow it.
So
it's just something I'm conscious of, and it's part of that discussion if anybody wants to delve into those aspects. You know, like with Aurum for EXU, Liam wanted to tie that to the Ereshkigal and some elements of Keyleth, in which case it was like, hell yeah, let's do that, but let's also ensure that this is your story and that this is your narrative, and it doesn't become, you know, oh, your character is, you know, a guy that works with Keyleth. It's like, your character is this, your character's about this, this is their history, this is their personality, and also at the end of all that, they also have a cool connection to a previous campaign character, you know, and that's kind of the balance that I like to keep.
I'm just
laughing because we have such a great mix of like original characters, original storyline, each campaign. There are these great tie-ins that have loose threads to old campaigns, and then there's this asshole that tried to kill Santa. And Matt, yes. Like, looking at it, I was like, yeah. What if I played Chetney? But he was a werewolf. And I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Just shit hammer ass clown character.
Oh, man.
We're making it happen.
Well, I remember when we were at your house and we were in your living room and we were all like, man, what are we going to be? What are we going to do? And you brought up, you're like, can I be Chetney? And Matt broke all of us and he's like, just gonna make sure that we're not like breaking Exandria in some canon elements. Uh-huh, and we were like, well, what do you mean? And Matt's like, well, there's no Christmas in Exandria.
I don't wanna make Santa and the elves canon in Exandria. Yes.
Two legs!
Once per year. When the moon is full on the 25th of December.
Oh my God.
There's no December!
Travis is like, I'm gonna make a candy cane time machine. Go back and kill Vox Machina. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Oh God!
It'll run off of Christmas spirit.
Yep.
Good thing we take ourselves so seriously.
He fits right in. I've got no preconceived notion of Chetney. I felt like he's a charming little guy who just popped in at the right time. And never, ever felt out of place, even though he totally should be.
It's kind of true.
Yeah.
It was so great bonding, like, as Bertrand with Dorian. And then as soon as I sat down, I hadn't thought of it until the moment you started talking. I was like, oh, he's going to hate Dorian.
Oh, to the moment I started talking, you were like, oh, I'm going to hate you?
Yeah.
You had this, like,
sure, it's all RP? Oh, yeah, I'm going to hate this guy for sure.
Yeah, this, like, high energy, affable thing. And I was like, oh, I got to flip it. He's got to hate him.
I won you over in the end.
Yeah.
So good.
You got the first toy.
Well, yeah, speaking of the old people again, how do we feel about Werther's, like, actually? Like, do you all like Werther's?
I like Werther's.
Original?
Yeah. Well,
that's a joke.
Yes.
That's a joke. That's a joke.
Actually, so I went out and found other flavors than just the original.
The green apple.
Green apple's weird.
It is a little strange. The coffee one is actually pretty good.
Coffee? Okay.
Yeah, there's like a Java coffee bar. I forget what they call it.
That actually sounds amazing.
It's pretty damn good.
Really?
Yeah, but do you ever have coffee, like candies, like hard candies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll have to try it.
Pretty good.
You really are committed to the old guy thing, aren't you?
Like, I'm trying to make my bed now. Just trying to get nice and comfortable. I can slide into the old guy thing.
My
cardigan.
My grandmother had like dishes of candy around the house because I come from a big family. We had like 30 cousins. There was always candy everywhere.
30?
On both sides, easily.
Dang.
Wait, on like combined?
Combined.
Or on, okay,
no,
okay,
not
okay,
30
okay.
on each.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Listen.
Prolific parents.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to do in the 50s. They would always have, like, the Werther's were like a reprieve because the hard candies were always in one dish and they were always stuck together as like one giant, like, murder device in glue. But the Werther's were individually wrapped. So you're like, if I don't want this sweaty old candy, I'm going to eat a Werther's. So I like Werther's.
They
I
did
like
stick it. Together.
Thumbs up. Individually wrapped.
Yeah. Great. Apparently after all that, somebody from Werther's sent us a bunch of Werther's.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've been snacking on it before games since then. It's great.
Yeah.
So thanks, Werther's.
And we're still kind of confused on how Werther's got her address, right?
Yeah. Hey, we pissed off Werther's. We pissed off Tootsie Pop. Like, we're coming for all the hard candy.
Werther's is the original candy of the Illuminati. They're just connected everywhere. They're like, there's little micro nano bots in the Werther's.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's how they get you.
Well.
I'm just going to clip that. It's going to start making the rounds on Facebook.
I know it.
Be careful.
Dang it. Well.
I feel like it's time, you guys,
to
pull from the Tower of Inquiry.
I love that none of us joined you on the name.
I know. It was just you. Like,
I was trying to remember. Do you want to do a
beat? That's okay. We don't need y'all.
Take two.
Okay. Are we going to do it? Okay. Ready? Time to pull a question from the Tower of Inquiry.
Why is it spooky?
I don't know.
It's got skulls on it.
Oh, it does.
Because it's got skulls on it.
It's got skulls on it. That's all I know.
Here's how this works, y'all. We've compiled a bunch of evergreen questions from you, the critters, and incorporated them into a Chenga tower precariously made up of numbered blocks. At the end of each segment, or whenever the tavern keeper, me, wills it, one of us will pull a block and read the number, and Danny will tell us what the question is and who asked it. And if the tower falls, there will be dire consequences to whomever is behind its destruction.
Oh, damn.
What? Okay.
And with that, who wants to pull, you guys? Robbie, you should go.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're the guest.
Well, surely I can't screw this up on the first try, right?
Yes, you can.
Yes, I can.
Don't rush it.
Yeah.
Believe in yourself. You can screw up anything
believe
if you really put
me
your mind
that
to
believes
it.
Believes in me. Wow.
Are there rules for this?
A tight tower.
Is it a one-handed pull? Can you do two hands?
Are you trying to rules me
right now?
I think the official Chenga rules are you can only use one hand at a time. You can use both hands, but you can't use both at the same time.
Are these painted together?
I just want to make sure Robbie cheating Daniel doesn't.
This is sticky. I am putting force behind this.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I'm not kidding you guys.
You can't mess it up on the first try. Oh, Robbie.
Guys.
Oh, my God, Robbie.
Oh, there we go.
I'm hitting this hard.
Oh, okay. Shit.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Omar, are you okay?
Oh,
good luck. Sorry, Arm.
No,
he's fine.
32.
32?
32.
Okay, let's see here.
I'll go back, Jai.
All right, here we go. Back.
Yeah.
What are the similarities and differences between your character and yourself? From A Life of Riley on Instagram.
Similarities and differences between your character and yourself?
Yeah, that's
right. That's a good question.
Is that a question for all of us or just Robe?
Or yeah, who else? Yeah.
I will start. I had a small obsession in the fourth grade with joining the Boy Scouts, which I never did. And I think at the time it was like the Weebelows. Those were like the young Boy Scouts, like elementary school.
Okay.
I think they were like Cub Scouts and then Weebelows and the Boy Scouts. But they sent a Boy's Life magazine, which was like the Boy Scout magazine. And in the back, there were always like ads for fingerless gloves and pocket knives and magnifying glasses, and you could build your own hovercraft, all this shit. And there was one that had like whittling tools.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was like an instruction manual for like how to whittle your own stuff. And so I like stayed on my mom forever. And she finally got me like a small pocket knife. And I was like, I'm going to go whittle. She was like, oh, great, honey, you need some wood. And I got a stick out of the backyard and I started trying to whittle. And I realized it's impossibly hard and time consuming. Especially for like a fourth grader. And I got like a couple pieces off and I was like, fuck this. This is terrible. And she came out and she was like, where's the pocket knife? And I was like, ah, it's in the backyard. So I got cave whittling a shot for like 3 minutes. 3 minutes and 20 seconds or something like that.
So this is your way to make up for it all these years later?
Yeah, I might pick it up again. Who knows?
Ooh.
I'm just waiting to get sponsored by a professional chiseling company. I don't know.
Who says D&D isn't therapy?
I'm working on that fourth grade Weebelo trauma. Oh, that sounds like something else. I'm not a Weebelo.
Good.
Man.
That's so funny. What about you guys?
Yeah, I feel like each one, like, you know, Keyleth was kind of tapping into my insecurities. Bo was kind of the opposite and tapping into more of my, like, my confident, arrogant side. And then, Laudan is just me at peak weird, I guess. Just weird as fuck. Yeah. I'm enjoying Laudna because if Marisha does something weird, no one can clock me on if it's just me or if it's Laudna. So it's great. So all the like weird shit that I just do.
Forgiven.
He's kind of forgiven. Yeah. So yeah. It's nice. Yeah, she's been fun to kind of like lean into the irreverence a little bit more. It's nice.
You're you, though. You are you as a DM, right?
Yeah, it's got a lot of characters. I don't know if I can answer this
Dariax.
Question.
Yeah.
Dariax.
Yeah.
Oh, how are we similar?
or not similar.
Not,
that
yeah.
The part? Yeah.
We both a little flighty, depending. In social settings, I can lose focus and forget what's going on. We don't have a terrible lot in common, other than maybe like a love of spontaneity, mm-hmm. and kind of just going with whatever's happening in the moment.
You fully embrace that, to be sure.
Yeah,
Dariax.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And like I can see the joy on your face when you let go. It's so cool. Getting to have experienced you in two different ways as a player mm-hmm. and a DM, because you know you are just tracking a million different pathways at once when you're DMing, and Dariax is just seems like he's on a straight line, but it's one way, and it's so fun to watch you just act on impulse and do whatever you want. It's pretty cool.
Thank you. It's that is a big difference between the two of us, is the level of responsibility.
Yeah,
Matt.
Yeah.
Perpetually crushed under it. Darius, got none, don't care.
Liberated.
God, release valve.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Oh, man.
What about you, Robbie?
I really want to try to play something like kind of away from myself. It was the best. So similarities are hard. I feel I, as Robbie, generally feel pretty confident and outgoing in social situations. Like I feel like I thrive when I'm around people. So I wanted to experience someone who's not that and see what it was like to play the whole other flip side of the coin. Can you be charming while being insecure? And I hopefully the answer is yes, because that's a very important stat for a bard. But the way that we're alike is that you know, even though I love people and I love being in social situations and that sort of stuff, is I have always kind of felt like I've been on the outside looking in. So you know, in 13 or 14, when I left and I said, you know, I've always felt like I was on the outside looking in, and you guys made me feel like I've been a part of something bigger. That was a little bit of Robbie, a little bit of Dorian, because I like to bring people in closer to me, but sometimes it's safer to sort of be on the outskirts. Mm-hmm. And I would think of all the things that, not many things I share with Dorian, that would probably be one of them for sure. It's nice.
Do you feel like you learned anything about, like, because you're talking about trying to experience people who are a little bit more insecure. Do mm-hmm. you feel like you, like, walked away with any new knowledge?
Sure. It's a very vulnerable feeling to have anxiety and to be truly insecure. We all have anxieties and stressors, but, like, to have a bit of social anxiety, which I really sort of wanted to give over to, not leaning on like jokes or being charming or all the things that you try and lean on when you're making new friends or when you're trying to make a group of people laugh, just being vulnerable and not knowing what to say among a new group of people, it's incredibly frightening and it's incredibly vulnerable. So I think that's why at times Dorian lied. Like I don't find myself to be a liar, especially in social, but I found myself lying as Dorian all the fucking time. And like, and after a while I had to go, why am I lying to these people? They're my friends. And I don't know, if you're using role-playing to sort of, not using it, but if you're participating in role-playing to open up aspects of your personality and find out things and bond more with your friends, new and old, it's such a great way to get a different perspective than yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Jeez, that was like a college lecture. That was amazing. That was, you can turn that into a thesis, though.
Like, I do have my master's degree.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Paid off.
Mine is worse.
Leaning on jokes again. God damn
it. And we're back.
We're back, baby.
Can't help it.
Well, thank you at A Life of Riley on Instagram. And if you have any deep, dank, evergreen questions for us.
Dank.
You can enter your questions for the Tower of Inquiry at critworld.com/tower. I think it's time to move on, you guys.
Oh, we only do one block?
Two yeah.
Okay.
I know. Production talk, moving on to block B.
Production talk.
That's definitely like, well, above table.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Block B.
This phase of the four-sided dive is referred to as the deep dive. Where Lorekeeper Danny Carr serves us with some juicy questions. Danny, can we get a round of questions for the table, please? Put sure. it on my tab.
Sure, I guess.
Do you have a tab?
Yeah.
Can you put all this on our tab, me. Actually?
Oh, snap.
So cool.
This Yo! One's for you. This one's for you.
Don't they look great?
That's right.
Turned out good.
Oh, yes.
Get out of here in the little
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All my shit.
All right. One by one, we will be taking turns pulling questions from our tankards and giving our best attempts at answering them succinctly. Shout out to Flip This Bitch, by the way.
Yo, yours is made these. Gnarly,
and this awesome. See my little fatty pâtés at the bottom?
Oh, look at that cute. Boy.
You've been eating good.
Yeah, thank you for these incredible tankards, Flip Dang. This Bitch, who, of course, also built this set and also built our gaming set. They're just the best.
They are.
Love you guys.
Their staff are
And staff. You know, since I'm the tavern keeper, I'm going to kick it off.
Oh,
no!
Falling on the
All
sword.
Right.
Down there, yeah.
I'll do it. Oh, I'll do it.
Do the question. Go. Oh,
okay. Marisha, that's me. How does Laudna feel about working with a group of friends for the first time in her unlife?
Her unlife?
Her, yeah. Good work, Danny and Kyle, who made these questions. That is a good question. She's enjoying it greatly because, like, she's lived a very, very, insular life. Just a very much a life of solitude for, nearly 30 years. Yeah. And then Imogen, of course, came into her life a couple of years ago and has been her best friend. But this is like the first time Laudna has had friends, no doubt. Like, since she was, a young girl, realistically. And it's great. I'm just glad she hasn't driven everybody away or terrified people or given them nightmares. I mean, in mind, all those things actually
still
probably
still young.
Stand.
Campaign's still young.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're just NPCs.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have so many questions. I feel like Imogen or Laudna has like a little Flight of the Navigator going on. Like, did she try and find her friends when she was alive? 30 years later, did she try and go find them at their houses, but they've all moved?
Sure, sure. I mean, I think there's no way. Like, maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's a few people from Laudna's life that are still alive, but.
Dang.
I feel like there probably a lot of them are dead now.
Be honest, are you too young to get the Flight of the Navigator reference?
I do not know.
Oh, we could remedy that.
We really can.
It's so good. Dude. Classic.
Manzi's dad's in it.
It's a classic.
Compliance. That's right, Manzi's dad. That's right.
Compliance. Yeah.
We'll talk.
All right.
And Sarah Jessica Parker's in it.
Yeah.
Yes.
With some makeup.
With some hair.
Yeah. Like boom. I only remember because I just showed it to Lennox.
Like, oh, really?
No way. I did.
Hell yeah.
Loved it.
It's a good,
great film.
It's a good.
They did a genius thing. The opening credits, remember when they used to roll credits before the movie?
Yeah.
It's just 5 minutes of dogs catching frisbees.
Yeah.
Just sat there like, I was like, genius.
I don't
genius.
Remember that at all.
It's genius.
That's why I watched that as a kid. It was like one of our favorite parts.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because they're dogs catching frisbees.
Slow-mo, all slow-mo shots. Yeah. So great.
Speaking of, look at our boy over there. Oh, giving some lungs. He's getting the petses.
He's a good one.
Just being a good onset doggy.
Who's pulling next?
Hey, don't you have to delegate or condemn someone to pull?
I'll make Matt.
Oh, okay. I should have not spoken up.
No. Nope. You saw that coming.
Keep your head
greasy
down.
Wheel, greasy wheel.
Haven't you seen Jurassic Park?
I know.
Freeze!
Matt, why did you choose to explore a new city in Marquette for this campaign as opposed to somewhere like Ankarel or Shamal?
Oh, that's
an interesting question, actually. Because I wanted to try something different. I wanted to show other facets that we hadn't seen and show, you know, just different sorts of topography. You know, the continent has so many variations on the type of atmospheres that you can find on it, like, you know, many spaces in Exandria. So I wanted to, like, to show off how different it can be and how the cultures can have similarities, but also have, you know, many different differences based on the mix of cultures that create those areas. And I wanted definitely to start it in a heavy metropolitan area. We haven't really spent a lot of like long form narrative in a singular city location. So they've always kind of acted as hubs, yes, you know, or destination points along a larger journey. And so, I just wanted to build Drusar to be just that. And also for similar reasons we discussed, I didn't start it in like Ankarel or Shamal because I didn't want it to feel like it was already tethered strongly to a pre-existing campaign.
Yeah.
It can definitely create something new and fresh and unique to this story and these characters on its own. So those were kind of my reasons.
I wonder if we'll go to Ankarel, though. I'm sure we will. I'm sure Pass will take us there at some point.
If the story calls for it at some point, maybe. Yeah. There's a lot to explore in this continent. And a lot of really cool places that are being written by myself and a lot of other amazing people that are collaborating with me on it.
So yeah. That's cool.
We do get chased out of those hubs pretty quickly.
We do.
We show up, we're like, yeah, everything will be fine. A couple days, we're like, we can't get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
We gotta go.
Yeah, I guess like the closest thing has been Amon, but that was like at home, in our home pre-stream game, where we kicked it in Amon for a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, campaign two, we were pretty nomadic.
Yeah, you guys were roaming.
Yeah.
Well, the size of the world in campaign two in comparison to campaign one was just crazy. Like,
that's true.
We were globetrotting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think most of us want to like just get out there and explore everything outside of Drusar as fast as we can. When that map hit the table, that map is huge.
That's one region.
That's true. It's just a regional.
That's just the Odirin Wilds.
Yeah.
That's just one section of Marquette. There's many others.
We should have fanned out. We should have broken the party up into six individuals and just like fanned across the map.
Split the party across time zones.
Yeah. I'll see you in 4 days.
Holy shit, Matt. How's your hair that gray?
And cut back to the woods.
Never know if you'll cry.
Chetney's eating a gopher and I can't remember.
Oh, definitely eating some gopher. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Eat some more.
Yeah, and I guess too with like campaign two, you got really far away from campaign one, but we're dabbling in campaign one a little bit more.
Well, I intentionally wanted campaign two to be something very separate, which is why I made a very early rule of like try and keep any connections very minimal to campaign one.
Yeah.
And then now that we've done that, I feel a little more comfortable leaning back a little bit more, you know?
There's just so much. There's so much to play with, too. Yeah.
Well, it's hard whenever somebody plays a full campaign of D&D and you play another campaign afterward to not feel nostalgic for your old characters and be like, oh, I want to play the son of my previous character, you know, because there is that kind of that nostalgic love and connection. And I wanted to make sure I use campaign two as a way to kind of definitely show that you can create really amazing characters without leaning on something you've already created.
Yeah.
And so now that we've done that, campaign three, it's like, you guys know what you're doing now. Have fun with it.
Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Pick a question.
Oh, yeah, me. This cup is grand.
That's a really cool cup.
Dig a deep. Okay.
7,000.
Travis, how do you feel about Bertrand's lasting impression on the group? Can I just say, the most depressing part about all of it was as the chat was going, they were like, oh, Bertrand died with his dick out. Yeah. I was like, look, guys, if you pee in an alley, you don't have to describe putting it away before the climax of an episode.
Apparently you do.
Apparently.
He shakes it thrice.
It is the most unplanned, unanticipated unworthy thing for Bertrand to have struck like such a chord with the group.
I know.
And to be like the basis of the name. But that old sap, he did it.
He did it.
I had no idea like what kind of dynamic he was going to have. Can I also just reiterate that Bertrand Bell was designed to die in the search for Grog.
Yep.
I made him to die quickly so that when, if and when, hopefully we got Grog out of that gem, I would only have one character, but that didn't happen. All of a sudden there was two, and he lived, and he boned left Jell, so, you know. You know, he's finally full circle with this guy. I love that everybody kind of just, he kind of served as like a little catalyst, which was great, and you know, everybody kind of came around and made an impression on him and changed the way that he related to people. And I loved Dorian and Bertrand's vibe. I mean, that was really, really great. And with Imogen, like the whole spying, the spy duo where he thought he was like the stealthiest, you know,
that's right.
stealth that's ever lived, and she just wasn't picking up on any of it. I loved it.
Oh, good times with that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Bertrand.
Robbie, you haven't pulled one yet, right?
I have not.
Let's do it.
I shall. Mine's a little narrower.
It is.
I got some meatballs.
You gotta grease the uppers, boy.
Oh, no. What is one lesson, only one, that Dorian learned while the Bell's Hells with what? These are barely words, or I can barely read. It's one or the other. One lesson that I learned that he'll take with him on his future travels. Oh, man, that's tough. Boy. I want to give like a joke answer, but there's so many real answers. Always take a spa day.
That's a good lesson.
Man. Trust, probably. I think that was the biggest one. Yeah, maybe he had some trust issues. Not even necessarily about trusting other people, but about trusting himself with other people. So I think the group brought out a lot. It was a really supportive group, even in their dickery. Like,
their out-dickery?
Yeah, dick-outery. One or the other, I can't. But yeah, everybody seemed to like... That, for such an eclectic, wild group of people to get put together, they were also supportive. And I guess that's the nature of a D&D party. I know it doesn't have to be, but everybody delivered it in different ways. You got no-nonsense Ashton. You've got, you know, I don't know. If you got a big brother that's like in this position, you never get that big brother experience of getting noogies and getting your ass kicked and all that stuff. Like, he got that a little bit out of... Chetney, he got, you know, some romantic vibes around the table from other things, though he never really, he kept a distance at it.
Okay,
so.
Okay.
What did I do wrong? What?
I was wondering.
What was the one lesson that Dorian learned? Just one.
You're going to need to expand on that. The Tower of Expansion.
Look at Danny's face. Are you going to deny?
Are you going to deny this? Right now.
Oh, man.
I can pick another one. If you want me to save you?
No!
Yes!
No!
Save me!
We're not having it because, okay. Spill the tea. Because I was like, is he crushing on Imogen? Is he fucking crushing?
Are you crushing?
Imogen, that's interesting. It's good. I'm glad I know your ships.
Yeah, seriously.
What's your question, Matt?
No! No, you son of a bitch! Yeah. Should we guess?
Bell's Hells have left the big city of Drusar for the jungles of the Odirin Wilds. Tell us about what that shift has been like as the DM. This is a quick one. It's been awesome. I love being in the city for a while, but you know, after a while, you're like, let's go see some fun, weird, dangerous, open, you know, expanses of unknown nature. It also was helpful to not have to constantly have 4 million NPCs at the ready at all times based on whatever weird shit you guys want to do in the city. I have like 9 pages to the left of me that breaks down all the spires and all the, you know, possible places that I can think of you guys go to. And inevitably you look for things that aren't on the list and I have to make up weird shit on the spot, which is fun. But it also was a nice little like reprieve to be like, you're not going to run into NPCs for the next 100 miles. It's just going to be monsters and weird ruins and interesting challenges and, you know, dangerous sounds. And like, let's get into that for a while.
See, so. I like that. I was worried once I realized there were multiple spires and we're taking like trolley cars and shit. I was like, I can't really transform into a werewolf without, I don't know, a general population being like, oh! This might have been a mistake. I was glad to get on the road.
Oh.
Worship, look at this floof. Oh,
sweet boy.
Are you kidding me with the bow tie, too?
Hey,
yes, it's his critter bow tie.
What a little gentleman.
He wears that all the time.
You know what Omar's question is? Who was Dorian crushing on?
Travis, pull one!
Yes.
Do I get another one?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I barely heard your answer at all.
I barely had an answer. It's great.
I was just thinking about who Dorian is crushing on.
For sure.
I Travis. Stop thinking about it.
What was it like to keep the werewolf secret from everyone and then to finally reveal your werewolf self in game? It was amazing. It was great. I think there were only a handful of people that knew that was going on. Laura knew, you knew.
Yeah.
And then everybody else, especially Liam with that choice. Two games before? Where he was like, oh, you could have been a known werewolf, you blew it.
That's right.
And I was like,
as soon as I heard that, I was like, don't look at him. Just keep
looking
down.
Do not confirm.
Spin
Do
it.
Not show
spin
it on it. Your face.
Spin it. No, it was great. And I, you know, I've really recommitted myself to this character and taken to rewatching all of my favorite werewolf movies so that each transformation will have its own
flavor.
Oh yeah.
I'm picking up on it.
I'm just gonna slowly rip off one body part at a time until we work through everything. No, it's fine. I mean, I've loved werewolves since I was tiny. Like the old Lon Chaney movies were the number one thing I went to, along with Godzilla movies and like the blockbusters. I would just get all of them until I had seen them all. And I think we might have told this story once before. I was so obsessed with them, along with Teen Wolf, Michael J. Fox.
Oh, yeah.
That there was a Teen Wolf cartoon in the 80s.
I remember
Saturday
that.
Morning cartoons. Mm, yeah. And my mom came out one morning, and I had taken a brown Crayola marker, and I had drawn hair all over my body,
oh,
cut little
no.
paper triangles and taped them to my fingers.
That is so cool.
I like came into her room in the morning and just like, you know, my tidy whities like covered in Crayola hair. She was like, ah! what are you? And I was like, I'm a werewolf.
That is so cute.
And I had a little bit of Wednesday Addams vibe because we would go to church when we were young. I had a hard like plastic figurine Lon Chaney werewolf that I took to church with me.
Dude.
So like we'd walk in and they'd be like, "Good morning." Yes. This is my werewolf.
That is
amazing.
Cute.
I love that so much.
So I love him. I love werewolves. Always have.
Waiting for the chance to come around. Ever since they first showed up in Campaign 1, seeing your eyes light up when you guys encountered the werewolves in the Feywild, and it was like, oh man, one of these days.
What was his name, that pack of werewolves?
I'm trying to remember. Do you remember the name of the werewolf?
I just pictured someone in chat right now furiously
typing. I know.
It's only because
I absolutely had to like write that name down like a few weeks ago, and now I feel
yeah,
awful.
Same. I remember reading like
I remember that was
Lord something.
Too much in the brain.
That was the first time where I ever walked up to the edge of the D&D cliff of going like, I'm just gonna make that son of a bitch bite me. And I didn't do it. And then after we left,
right.
I regretted it forever.
Yeah.
I hated myself afterwards. I was like, go get bit by a werewolf myself. So now the itch has been scratched.
Delightful.
Gaelic? No, that's
it
the
was,
dog.
Hang on.
Omar, what are you trying to eat? Omar, bring it here. Bring it here. Bring it to mom, I'll trade you.
No. Small mouse.
What you got?
Bring it here.
What is it?
His name was Ukarat.
Ukarat. There we go. Thank you, Danny.
I had to look it up.
No, it's all good.
Lord Ukarat.
Thank you, Lord Ukarat.
Thank you, Danny.
Mm-hmm. What the hell is this? What did you find?
How many of these are we supposed to pull out of these?
That's
these
a good.
Glasses?
That's a good question.
There's a lot of them in there.
Let's go to the
you'll have to go through all of them.
We're trying to hit a fair amount.
It's more.
Yeah, it's more kind of, I'm looking at the clock, but let's do a few more and then we'll pull from the tower again.
I'm going back in.
Fine, oh, I know what your question says. It says, hey, Robbie, what?
Who were you crushing on?
You can say Chetney.
What was the reason behind Dorian's decision to leave behind Chetney's toy sky?
Oh!
Oh, that's a good one.
Good query.
That is a good one. That's a good question. It's a two-part answer.
Is it?
It is. It's for two reasons. It's because, and you said it out loud, you got my intention immediately, and that is that toys are made to be loved by children. Listen, if you're an adult and you like toys, it's cool. I like toys too. We can collect.
Yeah, we got
toys.
It. We got
yeah,
it.
It's
oh, yeah.
Fine. It's
we've
fine.
Seen your collection.
Yeah, okay.
Just to be clear. In line with the ceiling.
Yeah. But mostly toys are made for kids. And I thought the most loving thing you could do would be that the most loving thing Doria could do for Chetney, even if he never knew, was to give his toy to a kid. Mm. And that was the character motivation. The second motivation was I just kind of wanted to leave because I knew in that episode that I was leaving, I just wanted to leave an image behind. Yeah. And I thought it was a nice image.
It was so good. I'm getting choked up just thinking about it again.
No, it was.
It was
so really
sweet.
Good. Oh, a little kid just comes up and is like,
so cool.
Come on.
I thought about it. There is a little bit of history for that.
I'm gonna pull.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna go next.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
See what's up.
I feel like your hand's gonna disappear every time it goes inside that.
So
terrifying.
All right.
What'd you get?
Tell us more about your inspiration behind Pâté de Rollo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Both yours and Ladna's perspectives. Yeah, this is a funny one. This all just came out from trying to figure it out in the character design. And Hana came back with like the scissors and the yarn and stuff on her belt. And I'm like, this is cool. Really liking that. Scissors are weird. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I kind of feel like she needs like something dead. She needs a dead thing. It's like when Taliesin dresses you for Renfair,
sure.
And he always says, you need more dead things hanging off of you. And
Is that what Taliesin says?
Yeah, I remember him telling me that
Taliesin
once.
Taliesin always
says, you need more dead things.
It's true.
He told me more baggy. He was like, make it baggier. Nothing tight. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. He's great. You know, he's your Renfair stylist, yep. That one. And then she came back with the rat and I was like, oh, but it's gotta be like crafty. So, oh no, buddy, what? Buddy, why are you crying? Come here.
Come here.
Come here, buddy. Want a treat? Yeah. Then I was like, can you put a bird skull? Can you put like a raven skull on the rat? Like Ladna just got bored and had craft time one night. Yeah, I came back and then I ended up naming Pâté first, way before I knew what Ladna's name was. Figure out her name, but I knew that dead rat was going to be named Pâté de Rollo. mainly just because I wanted to fuck with Taliesin. That's kind of it.
Oh my God.
And then, yeah, it was later on that I was like, can I puppet the rat? And then that just kind of, I don't know, that became a weird thing. I was kind of feeling that one out in the moment.
Can I puppet the rat? If it would ever be met with a no.
But the real question is, when was the moment you decided that they should be horny?
I don't know where that came from.
I don't know where that came from. I think it's, I don't know.
That's one of like the, I think that was one of the new matte visages of Campaign 3. Just the like,
yes.
That's my wife.
You can have that question. You're allowed.
Oh, you eating questions?
He's eating questions.
Oh, yum.
It's rice.
Good boy. Good boy. Let's do like one more. Who wants to pull the last one?
Sure.
Let's pull.
Me?
Travis, you want to do
it?
Yeah.
Do it, buddy.
Yeah.
Do it.
Oh, sorry. That was not for you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did I grab two? So selective.
Be good.
How is it playing what is essentially a rogue slash bloodhunter multiclass without the multiclass?
Yeah.
Do you think Chetney might ever multiclass if just to get expertise and sneak attack? I was looking at this, especially after we leveled up. It might behoove us all and him as well, just to get a little rogue in there. He has some roguish items. Mm-hmm. Some items that help with all the stealthy, lockpicky stuff.
Did you also like put some like your points and stuff into stealth and whatnot? You
kinda... Fuck no. Nope. No. Well,
what?
His dex is like his second one. So it was like strength and dex because I knew he was going to be a blood hunter. But I'm just feeding the werewolf. And then like I was like, well, he also needs to be able to do some of this stuff if we're going to sell the.
Sell the, like rogue thing. Line. Yeah.
So luckily there are some magic items. I don't know why I'm keeping them secret, but I might as well for a little bit longer. I'm sure somebody will figure it out. And then
Pearl Stats already has you pegged.
Do they have it?
Yeah, they have it.
Well, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
I think I've seen it a couple times.
I'm sorry.
But I think it'll help everybody if we just get some of that other stuff. Expertise. What is expertise?
Expertise, you get to choose a couple of your skills, uh-huh, and you double the proficiency bonus on it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's how rogues get like stealth rolls of 30, you know, and stuff, as they get crazy bonuses to a couple of skills.
Do you have to take several levels in rogue to get up to expertise?
I'll double check, but it's pretty early in. I think it's level one you get one.
No, it's not.
Level one, you get one in expertise, and then I think level six.
Okay.
I could be wrong on level six. I know you get it again later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get up into the higher classes of Bloodhunter because somebody needs to do it.
I was waiting for it.
Sorry, Talzin.
I love you, Talzin. I'm sorry. Is that the one? Oh, he's going to kill me.
Well, we're level five. Which is where we lost Taliesin, right?
Yeah, wasn't last he level campaign five was level
when
five.
He died. I just gotta
so you
make
gotta
it
make
to
it to six. Yeah.
Celebrate that sixth birthday, and then all bets are off.
Yep.
New top of the leaderboard.
All bets are off.
And then I'll hop in and get some roguey rogue.
So funny.
He's gonna kill me.
Why don't we pull from the Tower of Inquiry again?
Okay.
Matt, why don't you do it?
Oh, God.
Good luck!
Because I think it's been a minute.
All right, I will do that.
It's sticky!
hopefully,
it
yeah.
It is.
All righty.
Oh, man, you took a side one, too, which makes it much harder. You didn't go center.
You think I'm going to take it easy on you?
Yeah, well.
No.
Yeah.
It's good. Right.
Oh, whoa! God! Oh, God!
Okay.
I am afeared.
Oh!
Why?
I did use two hands. I realized that was I'm not supposed to.
That's okay.
I totally broke the rule.
You get one.
You did. You get one again. While we're learning how to play Jane.
No.
Put it back.
One of you.
Just do the thing.
Might be the only other loose block, Matt.
That's true.
I'm going to do this right. Look, I play by the rules.
Please go down.
I know.
Is this like continue through
trying to cheat in Jenga?
The episodes?
Yeah.
It stays in that state stays, forever?
Right? I think, yeah. I think it'll go until it falls.
It's got some tech to it. Oh. There we go. Number 34.
Okie dokie. Oh, wow, we've got 32 and 34. Right. How exciting.
Nice. It was meant to be.
From Graphic Pabst. Okay. If your character were an author, what kind of book would they write?
If your character was an author,
mm-hmm,
what kind of book would they write? Mm. Probably like a book. A lot of them would probably write a book on like composting or like.
composting?
Yeah.
You know,
sustainable forest life,
yeah, foraging and composting.
Uh-huh. Maybe like some house repairs.
Yeah.
Just basically like a handyman book for living alone in the wild.
Yes, yes.
I put out a Whittler's Quarterly.
Not a book, a magazine.
Yeah.
It's a zine, yes.
Quarterly, that's a commitment.
Four times a year, yeah. Gotta make it through all those woods. different techniques.
Oh, hell man. Yeah. Oh, maybe like a collection. I don't know, man. That's a tough question.
It's a good one.
Like maybe a collection of poetry, like where the sidewalk ends. Where
ooh.
It's just, Shel Silverstein, like kind of a little spooky, maybe for kids and adults.
Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I like that. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With really bad doodles.
Yeah, Dorian Doodles.
Not great.
I'm going to pull one from the tower.
Are you going?
Do it.
I'm going to do it.
Wow, just like that?
We answered that one pretty quickly.
So Chetney, what would your book be?
Oh, I said I would do Whittler's Quarterly, but I also want to add that I do like the 70s retro design where it's all like big hair and like really short shorts on the guys with like big tube socks.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Man.
In it to win it.
Brick.
Oh! Whoa!
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
That was dramatic.
Okay. Number 24.
Ooh, we're in the 20s now.
I should have gone before.
Also, I don't know why I set the precedent of stacking them out to be safe.
Instead
of putting them on top.
They are supposed to be on the top.
That's right. No, you're right.
Sorry.
There we go.
Okay. what is your favorite way of adding flavor to your combat? From Philip Martinez, Marty Sama on Twitch.
Good question.
Favorite ways of adding flavor to combat.
You gotta love, I love describing stuff. Yeah. It didn't exist, well, it existed a little bit in campaign one, but Grog was just always about like the graphic savagery. It was usually in how do you want to do this is, but like if you get spells or transformations, I feel like that's where you get to like do a little kickflip.
Do flare. All the stuff, yeah.
But once again, like as the more you play, the more comfortable you get, the more we get to expand in those spaces. I think Liam as Orm is definitely showing how creative you can
He's
get as a martial
so
class.
Good. Yeah. Those descriptions.
Goading attacks. Blech.
I know. I mean, Battlemasters are great for that in general, but then also just he just brings an extra level of flair to everything, and I'm like, yes, please, more of that.
Here's the question. Is he going for it more in this campaign than he has in the past when it comes to the descriptive stuff? Like, is he really enjoying the fighting aspect
of it? He's always been pretty stacked.
Yeah.
But he played a full wizard previous campaign, right. So like most of his things were magic-based, which already had a more like cinematic, you know, mind's eye, descriptor, you know, insertion
wall
point.
Of fire.
Yeah, and so, but classically combat, you know, unless you're a person who really watches a lot of combat-centric media or is really, like a martial artist or really into different forms of combat, it can be a little challenging to think of how to make it more interesting beyond I attack twice and do this much damage. And so whenever anybody gets the kind of the inspiration to take it beyond that and really show how cool and dynamic in our imaginations combat can be as a martial class, it just makes you really happy because it helps hopefully inspire other people to do the same.
Well, that's exactly what it was for me in EXU. Like when we played the first few test games and Liam jumped in and I saw what you could do in terms of describing combat, mm-hmm. I was like, oh. and it took me a minute to figure out if that was just him being extra or if that was something that you could do that was cool and celebrated. Yeah. And once I figured out that like, oh, that's part of the thing, I was like, oh, cool, let's paint some pictures, baby.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Because you got to remember, like, you're unique in the sense that you're doing this for an audience. So, like, not only is it for you as a player, but, like, what a treat to be able to, that's just like a moment. That's just like getting teed up. Whenever it's a how do you want to do this or wherever, it's like when someone says, well, describe it, you go, yeah, this is for me and for you. Let's figure out something cool. Yeah, definitely Liam for me was like a big inspiration. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's good stuff.
What about you, Marisha?
Same thing. I think it's just in terms of like magic. You've got the descriptions of the spells in the book, but like how does it manifest from your character and how are they unique? And I just like kind of trying to mix it up from time to time. But I think it's always that balance of like being descriptive, kind of like what Travis was saying, kind of in your bigger moments as opposed to every time.
Yeah.
So try and pick and choose when it feels special, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. Ladna has a lot of weird undead necromantic shit.
Just a little bit.
But it can't be like what you're saying, but it can't be like every moment. It can't be like, I walk down the hall and the room thunders with every step. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
Just walk
After
down the
a
hall.
Minute, yeah.
Calm down.
You know, especially, I mean, we had Ford too in campaign two with all those Eldritch Blasts, but wanting Ladna's Eldritch Blasts to look and feel a lot different from Ford's. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. Part of it, I think, is just finding some identity with it.
Yeah, I think when you start playing role-playing games too, when you're learning the rules, you're learning how the game's dynamic works. It's very, it's very common to let kind of the descriptions that exist in the game set the tone and really kind of let you know how it should be. Mm-hmm. And then the more comfortable you get, quicker for some people than others, you can begin to realize that the rules can be the same, but the flavor can be whatever you want it to be that fits within your character's theme. I think it's like Imogen, you know, Laura's character, was based on a sorcerer subclass that is a really, really cool mechanical class, but the theming of it in the book is very, like, dark tentacles and, you know, like, alien...
Arms,
you know,
of Adari,
like,
kind of.
Yeah, like very, very kind of cosmic horror, you know, stuff. And she's like, I love what it does, but I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
And so it functions pretty much the same, but we just reskinned some of the spells, we reskinned some of the abilities, and made it her own unique thing, even though it operates the same as the class and the rules in there. And I love when any player feels excited to just take something and go, how can I make this more mine? How can I make this more unique to what I've built and want to play? Mm-hmm. And I think she's done a great job with that.
But isn't that the pitfall of, like, a lot of the framework too, if for maybe a less experienced player, for someone like me that's just coming in, is that, you know, if you've got a preconceived notion of what a barbarian is, mm-hmm. then where do you go first? You know, like, you go to, like, this stereotype's the wrong word, but you go to that one idea that's sure. sort of universal. Yeah. And I still love that classic fantasy. Like, the idea of the knight or the paladin, and that they're just straightforward, that is awesome. Mm-hmm. But, like, hearing about someone seeing a class and then choosing to play it a different way for their own enjoyment, that's so cool to me.
Yeah. When you say it's a pitfall, I agree in the sense that it just comes with experience.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's really fun to play what's in the book too.
Yeah.
You know, the archetypes are archetypes for a reason. And there are sometimes you're just like, no, I want to play a beefy barbarian that just gets angry and hits shit real hard. Sometimes I want to play an old wizard, an old wizened dude who gets bumbly with his spells but still is helpful. You're like, those archetypes are fun to play if you never had the chance to. And then once you have had the chance to, then you have permission to get a little weirder with it.
Yeah.
And you can see as the campaigns progress, all their characters just get fucking weirder.
Weirder.
Looking at you, fresh cut grass.
Yeah. Deep orbit.
I love it.
Well, thank you, Graphic Paps and Philip Martinez. And if you have an evergreen question for us, you can enter your questions for the Tower of Inquiry at critroll.com/tower/whisper. Good boy. You use your inside voice on set. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. I think Omar needs to go potty. So we're going to take a quick breather, but stick around because when we come back, we're going to play some motherfucking Mario Kart.
Oh, shit. Uh-huh. It's going down.
Uh-huh. Let's get some drinks. See you in a minute.
Drinks. Woo.
All right, buddy, you need to go potty. No.
That's it for the podcast version of this episode of Foresighted Dive. In the video version, we wrap up each episode by playing some games, which don't always translate well to an audio-only format. Honestly, it's mostly yelling, truly. So be sure to check out the rest of the episode via the VOD for the full chaos. If you've enjoyed this deep dive into the campaign, be sure to drop us a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you're using. Your thoughts may just encourage a new critter to take the plunge. Foresighted Dive airs the first Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/criticalrole and youtube.com/criticalrole, with the VOD available on YouTube the very next day. And of course, each episode releases right here on the Critical Role Podcast Network 1 week after the initial broadcast. We'll see you again next month. Bye-bye.